The date is November 7th, 2003, and we're watching Elf. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Merry Christmas!
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the pom-pom to my Ming-Ming.
Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
And this week, we brought in another guest. Normally, he's our Mortal Kombat expert, but we ran out of old Mortal Kombat movies to review on this show. But we have a special connection with this movie that we're doing. In our past episodes with Will and with Carly, you heard that I have an upcoming production of Elf, the musical, that I will be appearing in. And we decided to do this movie, and he is in this show with me. Please welcome the Foom Foom to our Pom Pom and Ming Ming, Mr. David Sun.
David,
hello.
Welcome back.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's so great to be here in between my job as store manager and my day job as, you know, wandering entrepreneur. So,
yeah. Well, that is who you are playing in our musical version of Elf that we will be performing in. I am the fake Santa. You are the manager. Did you happen to notice what the manager's name actually is in this movie?
No.
His name tag says Wanda, because this part was originally going to be played by Wanda Sykes, and she dropped out a couple days before filming, and they brought in Faison Love, and he decided to keep the name tag because he thought it was hilarious.
That is hilarious. It's funny that you say that, because the stage directions for the play very specifically says a heavy set black man enters the stage, and is referring to the store manager. And anybody who knows me, I am definitely not a heavy set black man. So,
yeah, I would say if there is an exact opposite of a
heavy set black man, it might be David.
It might be me.
So this week we are looking back at November 2003. When the movies in theaters were Brother Bear, The Matrix Revolutions, Wonderland, Scary Movie 3, and of course our movie for today, Elf, which earned $223.3 million on a $33 million budget. A lot of threes in there. We've got a full house going on there.
Wow.
Four of a kind? I don't know.
Yeah. And of course we will be spoiling this movie like millions of childhood dreams have been spoiled by the revelation that Santa Claus is actually their parents. So, if you don't want the movie to be spoiled for you, then please hit pause, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
So, the tagline that appears on the poster for this movie is, well, I have three, but there's a huge asterisk on that. Let me just fire them all off here. The first is, this holiday, discover your inner elf. The second is, this holiday season, discover your inner elf. And the third is, this Christmas, discover your inner elf.
Do you think that has anything to do with just political correctness?
Maybe, yeah, maybe like it's various posters were released in different markets. But I guess, I mean, the key thing is discover your inner elf. I mean, that is the consistent across the board.
I'm surprised that they didn't go with one of the, like, the three tenets of Christmas, or, like, more specifically, the best way to spread Christmas cheer is to singing loud for all to hear. That seems like a good tagline.
Yeah, but those may not be the best description of this movie, so let's go to Colin and do a 60-second synopsis.
Okay. When Buddy the Elf finds out he is not an elf and is in fact an orphan human man, he leaves the North Pole, passing through the seven levels of the candy cane forest and the sea of swirly twirly gumdrops, and enduring a walk through the Lincoln Tunnel to make his way to New York City, where he hopes to reunite with his biological father, Walter. Once in New York, Buddy is immediately rejected by Walter, who believes him to be a Christmas Graham gone awry, but he then makes his way to Gimbel's department store, where he is mistaken for a seasonal employee, falls in love head over heels for a fake elf named Jovi, and starts a brawl with a shopping mall Santa. Will Buddy be able to make it in the real world? Will he be able to convince Walter that he's his daddy? Will he be able to instill the spirit of Christmas in the hearts of New Yorkers when Santa needs it most? Let's find out on another episode of I Used to Like This One.
Right on. So yeah, I have been immersed in Elf for the last couple of months with Elf the Musical, which is a surprisingly good adaptation of this movie that I did love back when it came out. I mean, you know, Will Ferrell in his first starring movie, but it was one of those ones that you had to have seen. So David, before you were cast in Elf, what is your past experience with the movie Elf?
That's a really good question. I watched it when it came out. It was like a big thing. A lot of people were quoting it. It was very, it became an iconic Christmas movie almost instantly, I feel.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now that I'm thinking about like all those Christmas lists, the movies that you need to watch, like Elf is always nearly at the top along with Home Alone and Die Hard. Yeah, it really kind of carved a space out for itself.
I think part of its success probably has to do with the style of it, where it's given that timeless style where they steal from the classics that we already grew up with. I mean, it does have that element.
Yeah.
Colin, what about you? What kind of history do you have with Elf?
I came to Elf late. I don't know why. It was always a movie that I resisted watching. Probably because I'm a diehard Home Alone enthusiast, and I refuse to accept that any movie could be better than it at Christmas time. And so
this is almost the Star Wars Star Trek rivalry, yeah, or the exactly. Marvel DC rivalry.
Basically,
yeah, okay.
Basically,
Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat.
Bring it back,
exactly.
To David.
Yeah, you're Home Alone or you're Elf, and I'm firmly Home Alone. But I think it was just one that I came to watch more through friends, because I have so many friends who, yeah, this is their favorite Christmas movie, and then I eventually watch it, and to be honest, I'm still not, like, that big on it. I enjoy it, I think it's funny, but I don't revere it like a lot of people I find do. Like, okay. I know so many people who Elf is their go-to Christmas movie.
Yeah. Well, we have discovered in the past with you, I mean, obviously Home Alone is the one, and It's a Wonderful Life is another one of your big ones. What other go-to Christmas movies do you have that you feel like you come back to more often than any other?
Well, there's not, like, those two are the big ones that I watch every year, but to be honest, and I've already started, because I saw that City TV has a bunch of them on their on demand, but I'm a big fan of Hallmark.
Yes.
Hallmark romantic Christmas movies.
Okay.
And those types of things.
And you won't watch Gilmore Girls?
Yeah.
Oh.
and even though it's not one of those, but it's in the similar vein, there's a movie on Netflix called The Night Before Christmas. That has made its way into my, like, must watch Christmas viewing.
Yeah.
So I implore people to go check it out if they haven't already.
what about you, David? We've never had you on for a Christmas episode. So what's your go to holiday classic?
Yeah, that's so funny that you say the holiday Hallmark Christmas specials, because they are so bad that they're good, right?
Oh yeah.
600 of them are released each year. They have the exact same plot, yeah. But somehow I keep watching them. So yeah, I'm definitely, there's something familiar, really kind of cozy about watching one of those Hallmark specials.
You've always got a small town and someone that owns a curio shop, and her name's like, yeah, Merry Christmas.
It's literally always small town girl comes home for the holidays, has some sort of family situation she needs to take care of, but she needs to leave as soon as possible, or she needs to go off to college, but then she meets a boy.
that's the formula, but if it ain't broke, why fix it?
Exactly.
No, but as far as my Christmas movies, I really love the classic claymations, like the like Rudolph and Frosty. I recently rewatched the Rudolph one, and it is horrifying.
Oh, it is.
Literally so scary. And I, you know, I don't know what I was thinking as a child, but like the Islands of Misfit Toys, like it's all very depressing.
Oh, yeah.
But a couple of the more recent ones that I've really come to love, there's one called Claws. Really, really good.
Oh, it's an animated one. Yeah, that one's good.
And I'm a huge fan of horror movies, and Christmas horror movies hold a special place in my heart. And Krampus was a really good one. I really encourage everybody to go watch that one. That was insane. So those are some of my go-tos.
Nice.
Right on. Well, let's jump into Elf, directed by Jon Favreau. I mean, I wish we had heard from that guy again. I did read, though, that Terry Zwigoff was originally attached to direct this movie, and he ended up passing on it and went on to direct Bad Santa.
So
he got his Christmas movie anyway.
Oh, nice.
Produced by John Berg, Todd Komarnicki. Komarnicki? Sure. And Shauna Robertson, and it's written by David Barenbaum. And we open on Papa Elf, played by Bob Newhart, telling a story. Oh, Bob Newhart is a genius. Like, his delivery, I love him as a narrator. Like, one of the things that the musical, having been immersed in that world for the last little while, does differently is they've eliminated the character of Papa Elf. And he's just, I find him, though, like, he is the heart of this movie, as far as I'm concerned.
That's funny that you say that, because I forgot that he was in this movie. after doing the musical and then coming back to watch this for the podcast, I was like, what the hell? Who is this?
Yeah. I don't know that I would say he's the heart of the movie, but I do agree that I like, he definitely does a good job of setting the movie up and, like, delivering it on its way to, like, go on. But I agree. I really like him a lot. I just love that deadpan delivery. I really like Bob Newhart in this. I also really liked him in Big Bang Theory when he shows up as that Professor Neutron or whatever. It's just that deadpan delivery. Something is just something does it for me.
Yeah, there is a scene early on in this in Elf where he's saying goodbye to Papa Elf, and there's that kind of lingering feeling of like, oh, you know, like I kind of raised you and now you're going off to find your other dad, you know, I'm gonna miss you. And I was like, oh, that's a really nice sentiment. I really kind of miss that aspect of it in the musical, but I don't know that they would have been able to fit that all in.
I like the physical comedy too, though, of like when Buddy is sitting on his lap.
Green screen. They like green screened him.
It's forced perspective.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
Yeah, like I watched on Netflix with the movies that made us or whatever. They have like a Elf thing too, where they did like a behind the scenes thing, and they show specifically for like when he's on the tricycle. It's like this, the tricycle is way longer and Bob Newhart's sitting probably like 2 meters back. And then the hands that are on the shoulders are an actual little child's.
Oh my God.
And then they just filmed it from the front. And then it's the same with when Buddy sits on him. It's like Bob Newhart is sitting a couple meters back. And then the legs are actually like a little kid's legs under a board.
Yeah. Oh my God. That is so funny.
Yeah, like in the movie, a lot of the elves, I mean, there are obviously a lot of children in this movie, but a lot of the elves, they cast all the background elves to be 5'6" or smaller. And then they're put further back, and then the scene like the classroom, they've got Buddy up on a platform closer to the camera, and then they've got them further back, but they're also smaller people, so they look even smaller beside them. Yeah, none of it is done with any kind of blue screen, green screen.
That is so wild, because even watching it back, the scenes when they're building the toys and they're talking about the Etch-a-Sketches and all that, I remember thinking, like, did they just put like a face transplant onto, you know, like a Snapchat filter to move these faces onto smaller people's bodies? It did not look natural to me. So that's really surprising that they did it all practically.
Yeah. Had to change out sets whenever they'd have a scene with, you know. So yeah, it's just, it's some very impressive filmmaking, and yeah, very little actual special effects going on though.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know that when I started with the musical, I was like, okay, how are they doing elves? Like, we're going to have a bunch of kids in this show, aren't we? And it's just like, oh, okay, no. We're going to have people crawling on their knees. That's part of the comedy. You know, or you know, or the fact that instead of getting reindeer on stage or, you know, fake reindeer or anything, they throw in a joke about how the sled is now just rocket powered. You know, thanks, PETA.
Well, you know what? We should have got a knee pad company to sponsor us because our knee pad budget is through the roof.
Through the roof.
Is that an actual, like, is it in the musical, is the sleigh solely rocket powered?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's actually funny because I was wondering about that watching this opening scene when Papa Elf shows him the, I can't remember what they call it, but that massive rocket turbine thing. And I was just like, I was like, okay, I get it. The sled, like when it was reindeer powered, it went on Christmas cheer, whatever.
Yeah, but, the clausometer was out in the red, you know?
But if the clausometer is down, what is the physics behind using this rocket to power the sled, but still having the reindeer in front of it? Wouldn't they just get bowled over?
it feels like they would be dragged behind the sled as the sled propels itself through the air.
So I'm going to say that's a good correction for the musical, and probably makes the staging a little more easy as well.
Well, yeah, and the musical also eliminates the four horsemen. Now, I will say it's been a few years since I've seen this movie, and I kind of forgot about the whole four horsemen of the apocalypse chasing Santa through Central Park.
The Central Park Rangers.
Yeah. That was a goofy bit that they dropped out of the musical that, okay, no, that wasn't needed anyway. Don't worry about that.
I mean, it's kind of a scene that's never made sense to me just because, like, I get the police, they might be in Central Park, but they're treating it like they're there to, like, murk Santa.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Exactly.
So, I don't know.
So, at the North Pole, I will say, I do also enjoy the physical comedy of all the little bits where, like, he's showering in the tiny shower.
Yes.
And constantly hitting his head.
That's one thing that I was really, we're here because I'm in the musical, but, like, one of the things I really wish that we were able to do was work on that scale. You know, like, there's that scene where he's overhearing the elves talk about him, and he's kind of, like, in the rafters, but he's just standing up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just thought that was so funny, but yeah. Very well noted.
Yeah. With the jack-in-the-boxes, I read, they were controlled remotely. So when he gets demoted, you know, because he's not making enough Etch-a-Sketches, Jon Favreau was remote controlling those jack-in-the-boxes from off-camera so that the surprises or the reactions from Will Ferrell would be more authentic.
Poor guy.
Terrifying. So in the musical, how does Buddy end up discovering that? Because I feel like in the movie, Papa Elf is the one who tells him, like, his history or whatever and all that.
Yeah.
How does that happen in the musical?
So he overhears the elves talking about it. And then he goes to Santa Claus instead. And Santa Claus is the one who kind of breaks the news to him. So Papa Elf has just been replaced by Santa Claus.
Okay.
Yeah.
The other thing I was going to point out about Buddy is, I mean, Will Ferrell is like, what, 30? In the 30-something? Like, mid-30s, maybe, in this movie?
Yeah.
So I was trying to work out, because he's in school, and the school-aged elves are like 5 years old, but Papa Elf is like
490, I think he says at some point.
Yes. So it's just weird, like, the age. I was trying to think at how many human years are one elf year, do you think? Is it like 10? 7 maybe?
Well, yeah, like even the other workers that are around. I mean, we've got like Peter Billingsley from A Christmas Story. Like, how old are they? Are they in their hundreds?
Yeah. Yeah, so, like, I almost felt like the people he's in school with are probably like 50 years old in elf years.
I don't know. There's so much like flawed logic. Come on. We need to explain this.
There's so many plot holes in this, and I will, we'll get to them when we get there.
Well, yeah, because one other character that the musical writes out is Leon the Snowman. We get the narwhal,
Yes.
Really?
Yes, we do. I love the claymation.
Oh, yeah. God, yeah.
That was like, that was Jon Favreau's, like, one of the, what do you want to call it, like, stipulations or whatever for him signing on was that he wanted to make sure that the aesthetic of the movie was in kind with that, like, Rankin and Bass, Frosty the Snowman, and the Rudolph and all that. So that's why they have the claymation. That's why a lot of the elf costuming is the same as the elf costuming that you see in the claymation for Rudolph, I think it is.
Yes.
Yeah.
To the point that they almost got sued for it.
Really?
Yeah. Because I think even the snowman is almost exactly identical to the snowman in one. I clearly haven't seen these claymation movies, but yeah, the snowman apparently is similar to one used in that.
You've never seen them, or it's just been a long time since you've seen them?
No, I've never seen them.
Oh wow!
Okay. My goodness, you are deprived.
How are you on like Frosty the Snowman and Charlie Brown? I mean,
Charlie Brown actually to go back to your original question about my Christmas viewing, Charlie Brown would be the third must watch Christmas special or whatever in my lineup.
I remember the Garfield Christmas special was one I enjoyed a lot as a kid. I had that.
Yeah, I had that one year.
Yeah.
The Grinch, and the animated Grinch, I like a lot.
And animated Grinch, yeah. Frosty the Snowman was one. And I remember a California Raisins Christmas special.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, I did buy the Christmas classics that has Rudolph and Frosty at the end of last Christmas. So
yeah.
if it lets you guys rest a little bit easier, just know that I will watch it this year. So.
It's on the schedule for this year. Okay.
Good. Let me know what you think of it.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Because, it's nightmare fuel.
Yes.
Especially, is it Santa Claus is Coming to Town is the one with the Yeti?
That's Rudolph as well.
That's Rudolph. Okay.
Yeah, shit. Rudolph is horrifying.
Yeah. Okay. So the narwhal sees Buddy off as he heads to New York. The narwhal's voice is Jon Favreau. Bye, Buddy. Mm-hmm. And I read that there were several minor accidents that occurred in the Lincoln Tunnel, but by people surprised to see someone dressed as an elf walking along. And
what?
Yeah. Yeah,
you'd think that they would have blocked that off for filming a movie.
No, a lot of this movie was filmed like guerrilla style, where some of the scenes, like the one with the raccoon, was one where they filmed it. They found a place and they filmed it, and then just as they finished filming it, they realized they were on like private property. No trespassing type property.
Yeah.
They got the fuck out of there. But a lot of the stuff, I've mentioned this on past episodes, a lot of the stuff when he does get to New York was just them running around New York with a camera and just being like, you know, hey, do you guys want to be backgrounds in this scene? Okay, you know, let's do this.
Very cool.
Yeah. And there's the guy that he crosses the street with wearing the red jacket that looks a bit like Santa that got...
Yeah.
Pissed off because I guess he wasn't in on it or something.
Or didn't. And that is one of Sean's characters.
That's right. The fake Santa.
Do you play multiple fake Santas?
Well, yeah. I don't know if... there is one moment when I'm hailing a cab and he comes running up to me and says, Santa! Oh, no, not okay. Santa.
I was going to say, going back to the narwhal, that another anecdote about me is that I only discovered last year that narwhals are a real animal. I always thought they were like mythological creatures. And then I was watching some sort of like David Attenborough Planet Earth or something documentary, and they were talking about narwhals.
The majestic narwhal. Yeah,
they had the narwhals passing through the ice, and I was like, what the fuck?
That is so funny. But you know what? Looking at them, of course they look mythological, right?
Yeah. it's a water unicorn.
Yeah. I think what did it for me is I had never heard of any of them outside of pop culture, and then they just became really big in like in pop culture and like children's stuff. But anytime I've ever seen them, they have like rainbow unicorn like horns and all this stuff on teddy bears and that kind of thing. And so I just always thought they were just some sort of fantasy creature that was created.
Yeah, no, they're just they're one of these animals that for some reason people will just start falling in love with for no reason at all. Like a manatee. People like manatees too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sea cows. How would you react if somebody got onto an elevator and pushed all the fucking buttons?
Not as well as that guy does. I would be, especially in the Empire State Building, I would be pissed.
I've heard that there's some hack that if you know, if somebody presses all the buttons, that if you press the button that you want to go to plus the door at the same time, that it bypasses them.
Oh.
Turning off the elevator and turning it back on, your problem's fixed.
There you go.
Well, that would be handy to know. I mean, I none of the elevators in the Empire State Building actually go to all the floors. So, you know, they had to make this button panel for the movie, but, you know, still.
Oh, that makes sense. That's so funny. But this is a trope that has come up in a couple of different movies where, like, the villain is trying to get somewhere and some kid gets onto the elevator and just hits all of the buttons.
Yeah.
Like, this is, yeah.
You say some kid. I feel like you're referring to, like, Home Alone or something.
I think it was a Tomb Raider movie. I remember seeing this. I was like, why would... Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's obviously happened enough in life that I'm pretty sure modern-day elevators, there's some sort of, like, programming that after somebody, it's like it's almost like the board can tell that too many numbers have been pressed in sequence, and so it just like automatically resets it. I've seen that in like hospitals and stuff.
Interesting.
Because I've tried to press them all.
You're that kid.
I was that kid.
So when Buddy gets to his dad's office, have you ever paid attention to the conversation that Deborah is having on the phone?
Not until this last watch through, because I wanted to see how it compared to the lines in the play. But yeah, that was wild.
Because yeah, she's talking about declawing 8 cats.
Yeah.
I want the side story of Deb. That's what I want. I want to see the short film of, you know, Deb's day at home.
Yeah, we don't need a sequel to Elf. We just need this spinoff about Deb and her 8 cat declawing business.
Yeah, they tried to make a sequel, but Will Ferrell turned it down. Apparently, he was offered like $29 million or something like that, and he turned it down. I mean, I'm kind of glad this is one that doesn't need a sequel. The Santa Claus sequel's kind of worked out, but I don't know if an Elf sequel would have.
Santa Claus. Well, yeah, I heard the reason he turned it down was because the script was, like, god-awful.
Yeah.
So it's probably for the best that...
Oh, interesting. I read that he had turned it down because he didn't feel it was appropriate for him to try to squeeze back into his tights at the age that he was at that time. I'm like, but you look exactly the same.
Maybe he just has more modesty now.
Maybe, that might be. Yeah.
I just thought maybe it was like you know, you have the instant classic Christmas movie that is Jingle All the Way with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yes.
And then later they made Jingle All the Way 2 with Larry the Cable Guy. And, you know, I don't want to see that happen to Elf.
Shit, wasn't Larry the Cable Guy also who took over for the Tooth Fairy franchise?
Yeah. he's always there to pick up the pieces.
Good old Larry.
Someone else that was on The Masked Singer this year, actually.
Was he?
Yeah. Oh, he was pretty bad.
what? Like, I'm trying to imagine, like, he could maybe pull off, like, a Toby Keith song or some country. I don't know how well he would do if they have to stick to pop songs.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was that he sang, but you can sing anything you want, but yeah, I don't remember. One guy came out and sang opera. Yeah, I don't remember what Larry the Cable Guy sang. I just remember it wasn't that good. I have to say that when he is kicked out of the Empire State Building and he's crossing the street, I still laughed out loud when he got hit by that cab. I don't know why. It was still hilarious to me. The movie, though, where he's heading is to a Gimbel's.
Yes, I was going to talk about this. So originally it was supposed to be Macy's. And I guess through some licensing problems or something like that, it ended up getting changed to Gimbel's. But somehow for the musical, they got the licensing for Macy's.
Yeah.
Do you know anything about that?
No, I don't know anything about that.
I wonder why. Well, I mean, I bet Macy's was like kicking themselves when it ended up being such a wild success. Because I thought, like, I only know Gimbel's department store from the Goldbergs.
Yeah.
Because Beverly Goldberg is obsessed with it.
What it was in the Christmas Story too?
Oh, maybe. I thought by the time the Elf came out, it would have been defunct. But
so this is why Macy's didn't move forward with the contract. So apparently they were originally signed to be a Macy's, and they were going to film in the actual Macy's store. But Macy's branding indicates that their Santa is the real Santa. So when there's a scene that there's a scene that reveals that the Santa is fake, and Macy's didn't want that to be included in the movie.
Huh. Interesting.
Wow, that's commitment to your Santa lie.
yeah, for sure. But you know, with the mention of Gimbel's, well, I think that means it's time for Sponsorship Corner.
Better time than any.
There we go. Yeah. Always on the lookout for product placements in movies. This week, Elf is brought to you by Barbie, Mr. Potato Head, Bob the Builder, Etch-a-Sketch, Monopoly, Hot Wheels. Those were all the ones that were... Oh, and Gund. Those were all the ones that were being made at the North Pole, which I also thought was like an impressive touch with the North Pole, is the fact that they were making name brand shit. It wasn't just like wooden trains and stuff.
That's that. I wonder, like, how that works. Speaking of licensing, like, maybe Santa's Workshop has some sort of like exclusive licensing to make brand name stuff.
Yeah, they must. Also brought to you by Sesame Street, Light Bright, Louisville Slugger, The Real Huff Skateboard, Kodak, FedEx, McDonald's, Hershey's, Pop-Tarts, Coca-Cola, and Dasani, the New York Jets, Cadillac, Tamiflu. Yeah, that was in the doctor's office. Sony, MCA Music, Chanel, Clinique, Estee Lauder, Wonderbra, Kangol, Nike, Isotoner Gloves, Strawberry Women's Clothing, Bloomingdale's, Aldo, and of course Gimbel's Department Store. And also the books The Sea King by Jane Yolen and Pygmalion by Glenda Lesnoff and a few other books that I couldn't quite make out. And finally, the fictional companies of Little Buddy's Diapers, Greenway Press, and Walter Hobbs & Son Publishing. Plus, I think an argument could be made that Keebler, although not featured, is the number one thing that comes to mind when you see a gag about elves burning in a tree. So, and this has been Sponsorship Corner.
That is a lot of sponsorships, my God.
Yeah, but not the biggest one we've had on the show. But boy, I mean, Coke being associated with that burp that Will Ferrell does. I mean, God, still hilarious. Did you hear that? I love that moment. Oh, my God. I don't know how I would be able to handle, though, the amount of eating that Will Ferrell did have to do in this movie. With his candy spaghetti. I read that he vomited after the first take eating that candy spaghetti where he crumbles the Pop-Tarts on top and everything like that. I mean, I've had a stoner life, so I've had some weird shit before where it's like, oh, this is going to be amazing. But that's just too much.
Yeah, I was trying to think about whether or not syrup on spaghetti would be disgusting or not. Like, I can't. It doesn't seem like it would be that bad, but at the same time, I'm not really compelled to go out and try it necessarily.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's gross because he puts syrup plus the pasta sauce. That might be not great.
Yeah, that's so funny. We have that scene in the musical as well, and the actors actually have to eat it. So, Steven was like, can we try to do anything else but the pasta? They were going to give him pasta sauce. But now they're trying to come up with some sort of jelly, raspberry jelly thing that looks like pasta sauce. But so far, we haven't seen it. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be a rough one on him.
I mean, I hope he doesn't have to sing, like, in or around doing that. That would be awful.
Like, what's the weirdest thing that you think you've ever actually tried? I mean, like, you know, like, the syrup and noodles thing, like, you know, there are the kids out there that like just butter noodles, right? So syrup noodles, it's a sweet version of that. But, I mean, what's one of those weird things that you'll try? Here's one that I have that I once tried. Someone once suggested to me to try a peanut butter and pickle sandwich.
Oh.
Hmm.
And I'm like, I don't know about that. She's like, no, trust me. It doesn't sound like it'll work, but it works. And it actually kind of does. Like, it's weird that it actually kind of does. But, I mean, it's like having a hamburger with a donut bun or things like that. I don't know. I mean,
I know back in the day, when I was in junior high school in my small town, we had like a little confectionery with a little cafe at the back. And the guy who worked there, we would always go and we would just buy poutines. But the one day he recommended that we try onion rings with honey. And it was phenomenal. It was so good.
Oh, yeah, Funky Pickle Pizza used to keep honey jars on their counter.
Hmm.
Yeah, adding honey to pizza was amazing. Yeah.
Hmm.
That's so interesting. I used to, the weirdest thing I've ever done, and I don't know if it's pickles, the sweet and sour thing, was we used to dip pickles into cake frosting when we were kids.
Huh. Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Huh. Yeah, I kind of like that. I mean, in the musical, they mention Fluffernutters, so I mean, it's like, don't they mention Fluffernutters?
I think they do.
Yes,
they do. Yeah.
And I mean, you know, I'm a sucker for a good Fluffernutter, that's for sure.
Hey, what is Fluffernutter?
It's like, it's whipped marshmallow topping.
Okay.
Okay.
But I like taking a little peanut butter, a little Nutella, and a little Fluffernutter, or like whatever I guess it's like Jiffy Frost or something. I don't know what it's actually called. But you put that all together and it's like a s'mores sandwich.
Yeah, that legit sounds good though.
Yeah,
that sounds... I'll order those right now.
That sounds not bad.
Oh,
I feel like we went over, we skipped the Gimbals Santa Brawl, or is that after this?
No, it's the next day, but yeah.
Okay.
I mean, when he gets to Gimbals, I read though, with that Santa Brawl, they filmed it in one take. That's actually one of the only scenes that does have green screen in it. Because they didn't have the kids on set, because they weren't going to rebuild all that shit.
So it's like,
it has to be done in one take, and we don't want one of the kids messing up this shot. So some of those kids are blue screened in, because they, you know, they only had one shot at it.
Yeah.
So Sean actually plays the Santa, who is in the Santa Brawl. And we actually have fight choreography scheduled for next week, so this is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. But I don't think it'll be anything as elaborate as smashing like a whole city of Lego. I mean, that's an impressive makeover, but I don't have faith that we're going to have quite that extravagant of a Macy's.
Once we're done with it.
We'll see. It's a festival place show, so.
Somebody at least needs to get smashed through like a mountain of Christmas presents or something. That would be easy enough to reset night after night.
Yeah, that could be done.
I really hope they give you some really elaborate like choreography for it, but we'll have to see.
Yeah, apparently there's only like 8 bars of music to underscore it, so it sounds like it's actually not going to be that much.
Damn.
Yeah.
So, but you know, like, we are talking about the Santa and the manager, and, well, we have the manager of the musical with us right here. We have Wanda himself.
Wanda.
So I think it's time for us to do a little I Used to Like This One Piece Theater.
Okay.
So, David, Colin, I have sent each of you a script. Now, this isn't the actual fight scene. I looked at the script for the fight scene, and it's like, it's not that exciting. But this is the scene with the Gimbal's manager and Buddy, when Buddy finds out that Santa is going to be coming the next day. And so I figure, let's let David give people a little preview of the manager. But yeah, let's have David playing the Gimbal's manager, and Colin, you give me some Buddy the Elf.
All right, I'll put on my excited voice. So it starts at the Wow, What's This, right?
Wow, What's This, yeah. David's first, I used to like this One Piece theater.
All right, okay. Are you ready, David?
I'm ready.
Okay.
Wow, what's this?
This is a North Pole.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not. Where's the snow?
Why are you smiling like that?
I just like to smile. Smiling's my favorite.
Make work your favorite. That's your new favorite, okay? Work is your new favorite.
Fine.
It's time for an announcement, okay, people? Tomorrow morning, 10 a.m., Santa Claus is coming to town.
Santa! Oh my God! Santa here? I know him! I know him!
He'll be here to take pictures with all the children 10 a.m. tomorrow.
10 a.m. tomorrow!
Santa's coming to town!
Yes! I used to like this One Piece theater.
I like it.
And hopefully that doesn't throw David off too much for lines, because now he's thinking.
It's funny that you say that, because watching this, watching the movie back, I've never done a play that has been adapted from a movie, but yeah. A lot of this show actually follows the script almost to the T, because there were there were scenes that were going through. I'm like, how do I know all of these words? This has a few changes, but for the most part, there are actually scenes that were completely lifted directly from the movie put into the musical. So
yeah, like I noticed one of my lines is definitely the same, where it's just cool it, Zippy. And I've always found that line unusual, where it's like Zippy, that's fun, Zippy. And then it's like, oh, he says Zippy in this movie. Like it's okay. Yeah, I've noticed that too.
Yeah, that'd
Thanks be for doing that, Colin. That was fun.
No worries. I used to like this One Piece theater. Is probably my favorite bit. But I was gonna say, it must be tough sometimes to like do an adaptation of a movie, especially when it's a movie like Elf that is so like intensely popular, and people already have such like specific expectations.
Yeah. Well, I was once part of Young Frankenstein, the musical, which is also a very fun musical adaptation from a movie. And I've seen a few others, like Heathers. I saw Heathers, the musical.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, at least with this one, it already kind of has a musical foundation to it.
Yeah,
because
that's true.
As we know, the three elf rules are: make every day like Christmas, anyone can be on the nice list, and the fastest... Oh, shit, I already screwed it up.
The best way Christmas cheer
is singing loud for all to hear. Yeah, I forgot the word best for a second there. but there is, like, the singing and the shower scene, you know, and the fact that they sing at the end.
Yeah. The shower scene was a late addition because they didn't know that Zooey Deschanel could sing, but she and him Christmas albums are also my favorite. They're my go to Christmas albums for the holiday season as well. So
yeah,
it's good stuff.
Yeah, you're not a Bonnie M like I am.
Or... No, well, I mean, I like them, but
I'm sorry. Does Zooey Deschanel have a Christmas album?
Yeah, so she's in a band called She and Him.
Okay.
And they have two Christmas albums. The first one's called A She and Him Christmas, and that's the better one. And then the second one is called A Very She and Him Christmas. And they do like all the old, like Christmas standards, I guess you'd call them, but all the like old Christmas carols and that kind of stuff. And it's all like, if you like her voice, which I really like her voice, then you'll like that music too.
I'm gonna have to check this out, because I do like her voice. I saw her do a cover with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and I was like, oh, she's a really good singer, but.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because she's got, like, that smoky voice.
Yeah, yeah, she does. That, like, crooner, that crooner yeah. classical voice.
Yeah. I do hate the fact, though, that Baby It's Cold Outside is a canceled song these days. Because, man, do I, like, this moment, like, even Will Ferrell, I mean, this is, like, one of the few moments in this movie where he's actually grounded.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is a sweet little song when they're singing it. And it's like, oh, yeah, but now that everyone thinks of that as, like, the date rape song, you know? It's...
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Can't defend it.
Yeah.
Still a banger, though.
Still a banger. El Fuego.
When I was watching with this with my wife, because, well, she likes it, but I was a big fan of New Girl.
Okay, yeah, I watched New Girl.
I pretty much like, I really like Zooey Deschanel and everything she did. I like 500 Days of Summer and all that stuff, too. But I always forget, it always takes me a moment when I see her on the screen in this movie, because I'm not used to seeing her blonde, and I've never seen a person look so different with different color hair. Like, yeah. She's almost unrecognizable to me.
Oh, yeah, because as a brunette, she is straight up Katy Perry.
Yeah.
But as a blonde, she doesn't look that way at all.
There's a meme that's going around that was like, I never understood why people didn't recognize Clark Kent without his glasses. And oh, yeah. A picture of Zooey Deschanel with bangs and without bangs. And she looks like a completely different person.
Oh, I could see that too, absolutely. And meanwhile, like, her sister, who's on Bones, I don't think looks anything like her.
I was going to say that in Elf, she looks more like her sister than I feel like she does in normal life yeah. now.
I don't know. I feel like Emily Deschanel has, like, a Carrie Russell look to her.
Yeah, I can see that.
Oh, man, I'm looking at this no bangs. It's like... it's... Yeah, it's... It defies logic. that's not even the same person. I'm like, I'm looking at them side by side, and I don't feel like it's the same person.
Oh, we'll have to get a comparison shot up. We'll put that up on our social media when this episode drops.
I also realized in this movie, I'd never paid attention to what her name was before, but
yeah,
Jovi is a really interesting name to me.
It means joyful.
Oh,
yeah. And the funny thing is, when we started doing the show and the lead actress is named Jovi, I'm like, that's a weird name. But I didn't realize that it was the same. I thought it was one they had changed for the musical. And then I watched the movie and I'm like, oh, no, it always was Jovi. What did I think it was? And yeah. I realized I couldn't place what I thought it was.
I thought it was like a normal name. Like, I don't know. I'm thinking like Emily. Joni? Emily or like... Julie or something yeah. like that.
Well, we haven't talked about the Hobbses. So, I mean, we've got Walter Hobbs played by James Caan, Emily Hobbs played by Mary Steenburgen, and Michael Hobbs played by some kid named Daniel Tay. Not like our Michael Hobbs, who is played by the legendary Will Brisbane. Go back and listen to our Ghostbusters episode with Will Brisbane. But I think that James Caan is such a great straight man to Will Ferrell.
Yes. Yeah, I think they really play off each other so well. That scene where, the initial scene where they meet when he's supposed to be the Christmas Graham just cracked me up so much, because Will Ferrell was just like, okay, you know, singing for him, and the guy's like, oh, that was weird. You know, I just thought it was so well done.
Yeah. It's kind of funny, because in that... Movies That Made Us or whatever documentary, they talk about how James Caan, prior to this movie, kind of had a bad rep of being really difficult to work with. I guess because he was in, like, The Godfather and stuff.
Yeah.
And his first day on set, he was just, like, he, like, had this big moment where he stood up and told everybody, like, just consider me to be Jimmy the Dream, because he wanted people to remember him as being a dream to work with.
Oh my God.
But there were a few moments on set where he, like, he just couldn't handle Will Ferrell's comedies. There's the scene where I think Will Ferrell tickles him, and then he has to, like, grab him by the throat or whatever and push him up against the wall. And people are talking yeah. about how, like, they legitimately, when they were filming that scene, thought he was going to kill them. Like, they had to take a moment afterwards and have a little bit of a breather and go on, but... Yeah, he sounds like a pretty intense guy, so it makes sense that he would be the perfect foil for Will Ferrell.
That's really surprising for me to hear. That seems extremely unprofessional for the actor to not be able to, you know.
A little bit, yeah. Well, I have to say, like, I am really impressed with the star power in this movie. You know, we have, like, all the people that I've mentioned, plus, like, Ed Asner and Artie Lang and Peter Dinklage. I mean, I guess this is before Peter Dinklage was Peter Dinklage, right? This was kind of the one that got him noticed, and then he became Game of Thrones guy. But, I mean, you know, and then the Doctors, you know, Jon Favreau's cameo, and Amy Sedaris as Deb. Like, but, like, even, like, having Andy Richter and Kyle Glass, you know.
Tenacious D.
That's a really good point. And I think they mentioned this already, but all this star power, and this movie was made with $33 million.
Yeah.
And we're going to give Will Ferrell $30 million to reprise his role for a sequel, which is the entire budget of the movie.
Yeah. Well, I wonder whether if he had made a sequel, whether it would come with his brother again, because this movie... I did forget to mention the important Patrick Farrell being in this movie as one of the security guards in the bottom of the Empire State Building.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, I didn't know that either.
Which is kind of funny because in our musical, the guy that plays the security guard is our buddy's boyfriend.
In real life? Yeah.
So it's kind of funny that, you know, we've got this, you know, related... as security guard and buddy in the movie, and we've got, you know, the related at, you know, or the couple that are playing the same characters in the movie. It's fun to me.
That happened.
Really cool point. I'm going to bring that up to them. I'm seeing them tomorrow. So,
yeah. Well, I know that I mentioned to the girl that plays our Jovi, Tegan, I mentioned to her that, hey, I found out that Jovi means joyful. And she's like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Jovial.
And it's like, I never really thought of it. Okay.
I was so proud of this knowledge that I brought her way, and she seemed underwhelmed by it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I'm like, no, I've been researching this movie. It's exciting. You don't realize how hard it's been seeing you at rehearsal, and I've been sitting on this news that your character's name is actually Wanda.
You know what, you should have brought this up earlier. I would have put it further into my character development. But now I'm gonna definitely ask for a name tag that says Wanda.
Oh, you have to. Yeah, I think one of the only special effects in this movie I'm not really behind, though, is the snowball fight. That's way too many snowballs, first of all, for the fact that there's what, like, five kids throwing snowballs at them. But then, like, the sped-up arm thing, I don't know if I can get behind that. He's still human! Just because he was raised at the North Pole around animated characters and everything doesn't mean that he's got, like, supernatural powers.
Well, I mean, if you're living in the North Pole and it's Christmas all the time, I'm sure you're having snowball fights all the time.
Yeah.
You know, he just builds up the skill for it.
Yeah, I was gonna say, he's had, like, more than his 10,000 hours of snowball building. I feel like he's got to be like a super expert.
I did watch a deleted scene for this movie where it was him playing hockey at the North Pole, and they removed it because it seemed just a little aggressive for Buddy, because he was hip checking people out and, like, making them fly into the bleachers and stuff like that. So
nice.
he's an angry elf. We know how tough it is in our Canadian city to get, like, diversity into shows. I am glad that we didn't try to replicate the Miles Finch character in our show.
Is there a Miles Finch in the musical?
No, there isn't. Like, everything that... Kind of like how Santa takes on everything that the Snowman and Papa Elf do in this movie. It's sort of the same thing with Miles Finch, is... Everything that Miles Finch does is brought to them by, like, other characters.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, like, the Andy Richter character is one person that mentions that they have an original. I don't even think his name is Miles Finch in the play, but they've bought an original manuscript. That's all done off screen.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. And the other stuff is all given to, like, Mr. Greenway. Well, Walter's apartment exterior is the same as Dana Barrett's in Ghostbusters. I thought that was a fun fact, since we just watched Ghostbusters a couple weeks ago.
Does it look familiar?
Just the exterior. I don't know. The interiors were all done in, like, an abandoned...
insane asylum.
Mental hospital. Yeah, in Vancouver.
The one scene that I completely forgot about in this movie, but ended up really enjoying this watch, was the mailroom scene.
Oh, yes!
And, like, Buddy's relationship with that guy who apparently is only 26 years old.
Yeah.
But looks like he's pushing 45.
He's actually 46. That was something that I did read, is that guy was 46 years old, and it was because they were originally going to cast it younger, and then they cast him but didn't change the line. And, I mean, it's... I've seen memes out there. As a bus driver, I've seen a meme where it's like this crazy-looking old guy that says... I love driving a bus. It keeps you young. I'm only 33 or something like that.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's kind of what I thought this was like working in the mailroom just hardens you.
Yeah.
Just grizzles him up.
I've always wanted to see, like, I think they show them in, to go way back early in our catalog, but in The Secret of My Success, but those, like, mailrooms with those tubes.
The pneumatic tubes, yeah.
I always thought that'd be so cool.
Yeah. Oh, it's very sucky. I always think of a scene in Tommy Boy when I see something like that, because there's the one where David Spade ends up getting his shirt stuck in a pneumatic tube and it tears off. Oh, no, Rob Lowe gets his shirt stuck in a pneumatic tube and it gets sucked off. Anyway, sorry.
I was going to say, this comes to kind of the crux of the storyline with them trying to pitch this Christmas story to Greenway.
Yeah.
This is the biggest plot hole in this entire show and movie. They're trying to pitch a Christmas book to be published so they could sell them for Christmas the day before Christmas. Like, how are they going to print and publish and distribute this book for sale?
Well, that's what it's implied as in the musical. But I did notice watching this, he was saying that we need a bestseller for the first quarter.
Yes.
So this one, it doesn't sound like... In the musical, it makes it sound like they want this thing distributed by Christmas Day. But, yeah, in the movie, it is a little bit more logical. I did make a note of that, because I had a feeling that was going to come up.
And you're right. It is different in the it is different in the musical, because the musical is very much about pitching specifically a Christmas story.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it absolutely made no sense, and I have no idea how it made it through all the writers. So.
Well, yeah, because in the movie, is it ever actually... They never actually do come up with a story idea.
No, in the movie, they're just searching for one, and they have, like, that dog pigeon story with the missing pages.
Yeah.
And then they're just trying to come up with one, but I kind of thought, for whatever reason, I feel like part of the movie is wasted on that whole aspect of giving Walter this plot. It doesn't really go anywhere. You know what I mean? And in the end, they just announce, like, oh, guess what? They made a movie based on, or they made a book based on Buddy.
Yeah.
But everything before that, everything that he's trying to do there, I feel like is irrelevant to the rest of the movie. It's just, I mean, it just seems to be thrown in to give him some amount of stress, but I feel like he would already be stressed by the fact that he has this grown man showing up at his door to...
Yeah. I think it's also to give him a reason to be disconnected from his family, right? Like, because there's like the dinner scene that, oh, he's that absent father. The musical, it's very much a driving force for the story. So, yeah.
The book is more of a driver in the musical? Like, that whole aspect?
100%. There's an entire 20-minute song about it.
Nice.
To be fair, it only feels like it's 20 minutes long.
Yeah.
Especially when you run it over and over
and over.
Yeah. Too funny.
I read that Will Ferrell suffered from a lot of headaches because of the amount of sugar he had to consume while filming this movie.
I'm surprised he didn't come out as a diabetic.
Yeah. Well, because even the cotton balls in the doctor's office, they're just undyed cotton candy. So he is actually eating those, which I always thought it was some sort of trick, right? Because one of the angles, it doesn't look like he's actually putting it in his mouth. So I thought it was just some sort of like sleight of hand or something. But no, he's actually eating like cotton candy.
That's so funny, because as a kid watching movies that have featured, you know, delicious food, I specifically remember that scene in Hook when they're all imagining feast in front of them.
Yeah,
I always thought it'd be so amazing to work on movies because you get to eat all this. But having worked on a couple of movies in theater where you have to eat food over and over and over again, it's awful.
Yeah, I don't think I would like that. I mean, I like food as much as anybody, but I feel like I would agree on a movie. If you're having to eat the same thing over and over again, and if things just keep getting messed, I feel like that's why a lot of times when you see people eating, they're just taking, they take like one bite. They're probably just like, they do the scene with just, I'm just going to have this one bite just in case we need to do it again.
Yeah, where it's like, if you stuff that whole thing in your mouth, you have to do that for every take.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's why there's spit buckets on sets and stuff like that. One stunt that I love in this movie is the one where he's trying to put the star on the ceiling. I mean, we've got a Christmas Vacation reference right there. I mean, that's one of my go-to other movies that I really like is Christmas Vacation comes out almost every year. But I love that they do it like with the old cowboy switch, like just the easy special effects of he goes out of frame and then the stuntman comes in to do the jump onto the tree. Like it's just more of those great, like just cheap, easy special effects to do.
Yeah.
No camera tricks necessary.
Mm-hmm.
The most notable one of those for me is when he's doing the dance in the mailroom on the table. Like I know part of it is him, but it's like, it's so clear that the shots that are from the back are not him when he's doing the, like, pirouettes and the, like...
Yeah. And I feel like he might even be on wires or something like that.
Well, to go back to David's thing about the face swapping with the elves, that was a scene where I was... Every time I watched it, I thought that somehow they were using something to swap Will Ferrell's face onto somebody else's body. Because specifically when he's doing the, like, crab walk kick... thing, it just, his head angle, just there's something about it that just looks off to me.
Yeah. In the mailroom, I like the line, it smells like mushrooms and it looks like everyone wants to hurt me. I definitely forgot about the jail scene in this movie, and again I hate to bring this up, but you know, because I've been spending all this time in the musical, yeah, he never actually goes to jail in the musical, so I forgot about that scene as well.
It wasn't necessary.
No. But what one line that I do wish that they had managed to keep is when the reporter is talking about... I mean, this would have meant that they had to keep the park rangers in the play. But the reporter ends up saying that the park rangers used controversial crowd tactics at a Simon Garfunkel concert in 85 and are still under investigation. There's another side movie that I want. I want to see this crazy Simon and Garfunkel concert with their controversial tactics.
Let's pitch it.
So anyway, yeah, we get to this end scene where Santa has crashed into the park and the reporter is there reporting. Again, I just don't think that the park rangers, the Central Park Rangers, were a necessary plot device. I don't know if I can get behind the logic that it was because Santa put them on this naughty list and they've never forgiven him.
No, that definitely does not stand. It seems completely arbitrary and didn't seem to contribute anything to the plot at all. So I'm glad it's gone.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about like the internal logic that Santa is running with here, which is that at one point he says... You know, the sleigh, he's telling, what's the kid's name? I forget.
Michael.
He's telling Michael, like, you know, the sleigh used to run on, like, basically the faith of people in Christmas.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you know, because it's not based on what you see, it's based on what you believe. Yeah. And so Michael goes and, you know, the thing, he gets the people to believe enough to sing. And they believe enough to ignite the sleigh to let it go. But then the first thing that Santa does is whips it around Central Park to this crowd of people who now fully see. They now fully see him. So, like, now they can't, they by this logic, they cannot have faith anymore because they've seen. So, really, instead of flying away to the North Pole, his sleigh should just, like, crash land in the middle of New York City.
I don't know. I feel like proof would give you more faith. I mean, like, it runs on spirit, doesn't it? Not faith?
Well,
like, Christmas cheer. I mean, that's why Jovi starts singing.
But at one point when they're in the park, he's, like, Michael says something like, just come up and show everybody who you are and they'll believe in Christmas. And Santa's like, no, we can't. Like, people need to believe.
I dismiss that line. That's true.
So, yeah, I mean, it still ends up being a heartwarming moment, but for a while I was just kind of like, it seems like they ignored one aspect just to have the scene of, like, the dad being kind of rewarded for his belief.
Yeah.
That sounds like your adult brain thinking there, Colin.
It is, yeah, that's for sure.
Well, I have to admit, I mean, you say it was still a heartwarming moment there for a bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
I got, maybe it's because I have a daughter now and all that, but I got really touched at that moment where you've got the little girl sitting in bed that says, thanks, buddy. Right? Yeah. It just, I don't know what it was, but I'm just like, for some reason, I just had this wave of emotion over me for a moment there where this little girl that had her name read out on TV, thanks, buddy. I mean, that was a sweet moment earlier where they're in the waiting room and she tells Buddy what they want. But how did Buddy get that information to Santa? We never see the scene where he, like, communicates that to Santa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, it is nice that she says thanks, Buddy, but the reality is that Buddy had nothing to do with it.
Because
nobody had to tell, Michael didn't have to tell Santa that he wanted a skateboard or whatever. Like, I'm assuming we're going the list route. So I assume this little girl would have also wrote a Christmas list, presumably.
Yeah.
So maybe it seems more likely that's how Santa would have known.
And, well, yeah, there's even the fact that the reporter, he reads it off in the list that she wants an engagement ring for her boyfriend to stop dragging his ass already. And it's like, well, she wouldn't have written a letter to Santa. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
So, maybe so he just knows.
Yeah.
So why did Buddy lie to her then and say that I'll get her? Yeah. Like, he should have just said to her, he knows already. Your head.
The assumption is he should have known already. That's what we believe in Santa for, right? So
true.
I don't know.
I can't get over, though, the amount of people that are just out on Christmas Eve. Like, yes.
Well, it is New York.
Yeah, but Santa is already there, which means presumably it's late at night, but all the kids are awake in bed watching the news, and we've got, like, all the Macy's employees are still at work, and we've got all the people in the mailroom are still at work watching TV. Like, it's just, go home, people. It's Christmas Eve.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's that late. It feels like maybe it's around 9 o'clock. To me.
Yeah, well, the kids are awake. Why is Santa there already? Santa should be there after midnight.
I don't know. There's a weird scene in the musical where we're looking around for the UFO that crashed into Central Park. So we obviously know, and people have already started reporting that, like, sightings of Santa Claus, you know, scene. But then when they are confronted with this idea of Santa, they're all like, oh no, he's a fraud. This is all a joke and nobody believes him. But, like, what are you doing here then? Like, why did you all come out?
True. Yeah, did they want to see what the Central Park Rangers were going to do to this fraud?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. But then we have the epilogue where where Buddy has married Jovi and they have a baby. I find it interesting, in the movie, the baby is named Susie, which I'm assuming is named after Buddy's mom, Susan Wells.
Yep.
But yeah, it's a boy baby in the musical.
Hmm. With no name.
No, he's Little Buddy.
Oh yeah, you're right.
He's Buddy Jr. and his middle name is Sparkle
Jolly.
Yeah, Sparkle Jolly.
It's more than that. Sparkle Jolly Twinkle Jingly. That's his middle name.
Oh my gosh.
But that's one of the songs.
So ridiculous.
Yeah, and our book closes, the end, and there we go. That is Elf. Now, Colin, David on IMDb, it scored a 7.0 out of 10 and has a Metascore of 64. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has an 85% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 79%. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like a machine gun fire of snowballs at the face. Hit us with some reviews.
All right. Billy S. gives the movie 5 out of 5 stars and says, "A most heartwarming Christmas tale with that magic and cheer of the holiday everywhere. Will Ferrell's performance is so full of joy and emotion that I just want to go into the movie and give him a big hug."
Okay. Buddy the Elf, what's your favorite color? Oh, God, I love that line, too. But, yeah, I mean, he could definitely get a hug out of him, I'm sure.
Yeah. Rich S. gave the movie 4 out of 5 stars and says, "Will Ferrell is toned down as Elf. That's if you can call a diet that sticks to the four main food groups of candy, candy canes, candy corns, and syrup as something that will tone you down."
Yeah, I found it interesting when I did Sponsorship Corner that there actually was no syrup sponsor. Like, the bottle just says maple syrup. And so it's just like, you know, I'm surprised no one jumped on that opportunity because syrup is mentioned more than any of the other Elf food groups.
What a missed opportunity for
Aunt Jemima or something. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Michael M. says 5 out of 5 stars. "This movie is literally incredible. Will Ferrell's performance was absolutely legendary. This movie is one I could watch on repeat many times before I finally get bored of it. This is a great movie to watch with the whole family and especially around the holidays."
How do you fall on Will Ferrell? Like, where are you in the whole Will Ferrell camp?
I like him, to be honest. Like, I don't think I've really seen a Will Ferrell movie. Well, I never watched that Sherlock Holmes one he did, which was apparently, like, really bad. But, I mean, I love Talladega Nights. I love Step Brothers. Blades of Glory is one of the best movies. Yeah, old school.
Okay.
But I even like Stranger Than Fiction, and I started watching that new show that he's in with Paul Rudd called The Shrink Next Door, and it's a more serious turn, but I thought he was good in that as well.
Okay.
That when he plays comedic characters, I find that they all feel the same to me.
Yeah,
but I've seen him in a couple of dramatic roles, and I've actually really enjoyed it, so I suspect that he's a pretty good actor.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that's just one of those reasons why I asked the question, because I know, you know, for some people, Jim Carrey is an acquired taste, and things like that, where it's just like, you know, yeah, I was just curious where you fell on Will Ferrell. I mean, I also enjoy Will Ferrell, but I fully agree, yes. For the most part, he's just a very yelly, boisterous type character.
Yeah. Oh, just really quick fact that you mentioned that. Did you know Jim Carrey was originally slated to play Elf?
Yeah. Jim Carrey and Chris Farley were like early people who were up for the role.
Yeah. If it had been Chris Farley, it would have been much earlier. Like, I guess this was a script that was kicking around since the early 90s. And that's when Chris Farley was considered for it.
Yeah. In that Movies That Made Us documentary, again, the writer talks about how, I can't remember what studio optioned it, but they wanted Chris Farley, and he absolutely did not want Chris Farley, and so he refused. He just kept it in, like, limbo for an entire year until the rights ran out so that he could take it back and
get who he wanted in it.
I see. If you were Jim Carrey, do you think you would regret the choice to do the Grinch instead of Elf, looking back?
No. I don't know, because people still love that Grinch movie
I think that Grinch movie is actually fairly well received and remembered as far as Christmas classics go. So, and Jim Carrey doesn't have a shortage of you know memorable iconic movies in his repertoire either. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Next review. Theodore M. gave the movie 3.5 stars out of 5 and says, "I don't like Will Ferrell a lot." for no particular reason. His humor just isn't to my taste. His Bush impersonations are dope, though. Elf, on the other hand, is a good movie. Like, some of the jokes I just can't laugh at anymore. Too offensive for me somehow.
Too offensive?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
Are you opposed to a burp? I mean, I feel like we've got a couple lines in the musical that are a little bit racier than anything that was in this movie.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Okay, the last two I have are pretty short. One is a no-named one, and he just said 5 out of 5 stars. An instant classic as soon as it hit theaters. And the last one is from a user named John S., who also gave it 5 out of 5 stars and says, "This is the Citizen Kane of Christmas movies."
High praise.
Yeah. Doesn't get much better than that.
Right on. So yeah, 7.0 and 79 from audiences and 64 and 85 from critics. Wow, those the Rotten Tomatoes critics, that's a much higher score than everything else. So David, since you've been immersed in the musical, and I mean, I'm sorry to anyone that's been listening this long and being like, fuck, well, they just stopped talking about the musical already. But it is the life that we have been living for the last couple months. But yeah, what do you think of your view of Elf this time?
I think the reviews that Colin read were very, very overly positive. I never would have given it 5 out of 5. To me, it's like a 3 out of 5 movie at best.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Like, I like it, but I there's something about Will Ferrell. I just don't find him particularly that funny. And I know he got a lot of praise for his performance as Elf. And now having done the musical, I can see why, because there's a fine line playing that type of a character between being young and joyful and just straight up creepy. And I think he rides that line pretty well. So,
okay. No, that's a solid point. Yeah. Colin, what about you? What do you think of Elf on this viewing?
My opinion on Elf hasn't changed too much, to be honest. Like, I had to make sure that I watched this movie 3 times because I was really worried that we weren't going to have enough to talk about. Because I feel like the movie is just so basic, for lack of a better word. Like, there's not that much that's even remote. Like, it's not that interesting. You know what I mean? I don't know how else to say it. Like, there's just nothing about it that I think is super interesting or compelling. But somehow, it's still, like most Christmas movies, maybe like the Hallmark movies, it's still enjoyable. Like, it still captures the Christmas spirit enough to make it enjoyable to watch around the holidays.
Yeah. And join us next week, where we will be recapping 600 Hallmark movies.
Yeah, exactly. David and I are going to start a side podcast that's just like a mini-series where we'll watch 10 Hallmark Christmas movies every Christmas.
Yeah. Hey, I'll do that. As someone that doesn't watch a lot of Hallmark Christmas movies, would be willing to put myself through that. To do like a little mini marathon until they all just start blending together as the same movie.
That won't take long.
Yeah, it will not take long. And it'll be like the funniest thing would be at the end, we could do a quiz where we just have all the titles and all the synopses, and yes, we have to put them together and see if we can get them. But the thing I appreciated more on this watch, I think, was just the one thing I really took note of in the movie was that I really like the aesthetic of it. Like, I like the costuming. I like especially all the stuff in the North Pole, like the claymation and just that aesthetic. Like, there's just something about the, and I think the forced perspective shots, there's just something about the way this movie looks, which is probably, I think that's, if anything, that's its unique feature. And I liked it this go around.
Yeah. I mean, they cut a lot of North Pole stuff because they wanted to get on with the story. And, you know, I have to agree with you that, yeah, it's, there is something about Elf where it's always been one of those where, do I want to watch this or do I want to watch Scrooged again or do I want to watch some, you know, and I think you kind of nailed it, is that there is kind of a simplicity to it that makes it kind of, okay, meh, that happened, let's go on to something that's really going to make me laugh. I mean, don't get me wrong, there is stuff in Elf that makes me laugh every time. And I did pick up on more jokes, you know, having followed one script for a while now, I picked up on more jokes that were in this that were some of the subtle ones. And I enjoyed those. But I'm kind of with you, is I appreciated the filmmaking aspect of it much more this time, more than I did the film itself. Mm-hmm. And I've also watched that Movies That Made Us episode, and so after seeing that as well, it is interesting to go back and view this movie and think about the amount that they had to change out sets and just the visual style of it and everything. And it's almost like the movie at the North Pole is almost a better movie than the movie in New York.
Yeah.
But there is stuff to love once he gets to New York. Yeah, I'd probably be like a 70% on this one myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I did think, like, when I look at the story itself, the one thing I find interesting is that there's never a rift between Buddy and Jovi. Which is, like, very, very unlike any Christmas movie that generally has some sort of romantic bent. Like, most movies would have had, there would have been a point where they had to, like, go apart.
Yeah.
And even his dad, it never really happens. Like, the dad is kind of just, like, the dad eventually, after the paternity test, he pretty much just takes him in. And then he's just kind of, like, the angry dad trying to figure out his book situation.
Yeah, exactly. But, he just comes to terms with it.
Yeah, but there's never, like, a big separation. Like, they didn't make a lot of the fact that Walter rejects him outright or anything like that, you know?
Yeah. With the musical, there is a moment where Jovi gets stood up.
Okay. See, that's what they needed that. It sounds to me like, I'm actually really looking forward to watching the musical, because it sounds to me like they corrected a lot of the story issues that are in the movie.
I feel like in a way they did, because there is a part where it's get the hell out of here from Walter, and there is the part where he stands up Jovi because he was busy doing something else. And, you know, in this one, well, they go on a perfectly sweet, although weird, date, but, you know, like, it's a crappy cup of coffee. No, it's the world's best cup of coffee. I love the irony that Jovi means joyful, and she's got such dry, deadpan delivery, like it's a crappy cup of coffee. But, but yeah, that is a good point, is that I never really thought of. But yeah, the little tweaks that they made for the musical story are what improved it. Like the musical, especially our version of the musical, I'd give that one 10 out of 10. But
I have to reluctantly agree with you.
but even just the musical itself, I mean, the musical is one that I could easily give like a mid-80s, whereas the movie, it's a 70% movie. It's a fun Christmas movie. It's one that I'll watch if I get around to it, because there are other Christmas movies that are in that queue ahead of this one, that's for sure. But still fun.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there we go. That is Elf. And that's our show for this week. Oh boy, a big thank you to our special guest, Mr. David Sun. David, is there anything you want to plug?
Absolutely. Come see Elf the Musical, Sherwood Park Festival Place, starting December 11th, I believe.
Yeah, December 11th.
We have an incredible cast. Our lead who's playing Buddy is incredible, and the music is so good. The sets are beautiful, and yeah, it's going to be so much fun to get back to theater, so.
Wow, of all the things you could have plugged, I am so surprised that it was Elf the Musical. I mean, this has basically just been one long commercial.
Sure has.
If you like that show, well, one thing you can do that would really bring us joy this Christmas season is to just tell your friends. That is the gift that would keep on giving for us, because word of mouth is important for a podcast. Or you could give us the gift of stars, just like the one that the wise men followed to see the birth of Jesus. Give us 5 stars, in fact, would be what you want to do. And a review. It doesn't matter what you say in those reviews, but giving us the 5 stars on the podcasting app of choice just drives us up the charts, helps us get noticed. Or if you want to go above and beyond and give us a couple bucks for this Christmas season, you could join us over on Patreon and become a Patreon subscriber at patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne. You become an executive producer of this show, And you could also get a shout-out on the show, just like our current executive producer, Joshua Blum.
And be sure to check out our website, www.iusedtolikethisone.com. There you can find links to all of our podcast episodes and our social media. Go check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. If you want to reach us by email, you can do so at iusedtolikethisone@gmail.com. Send us an email and let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells. Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. Thank you for listening. And join us next week when we take a look at another Christmas movie on I Used to Like This One.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Oh, thanks, no, thank David. You.